Whether you tromp out into a snowy field to cut down your own or pick one up from a temporary forest erected in a parking lot, today we'll have some tips for how to pick out a beautiful Christmas tree. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is here today. We'll talk about Christmas trees, how they're grown, how to pick a good one, and how to keep it fresh once you bring it home. We'll also talk about how to find a Christmas tree farm near you and preferences for different species of trees. Horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Mark will answer your questions. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it's that time of year again when millions of sensible people go out and buy six-foot-tall trees to put in their houses for a few weeks. And today we're going to talk about Christmas trees. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is here today. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. And I also have to say that this is our last weekly Hort Day for the winter.
Oh,
so
yes.
We're going every other week from this point forward. You are our honored guest on the last regular Hort Day until March.
Then I'll hibernate for a while.
as will most of our plants. So, and Richard Giron will join us in a few minutes. Of course, he and Mark will answer your questions this hour. But let's start with Christmas trees. And last year at this time, we were talking about Christmas trees, and we were worried about what the drought had done to them. And I know we're still seeing effects. How do things look?
Well, we kind of got a double whammy this year because we started getting moisture and we were all really happy. And then the moisture came and kept coming and coming and coming. So actually, early on in the spring, we probably lost a few of our plantings this year because of the high moisture. And then come later in the summer, we had drought again. So we actually lost a few. The last couple weeks, I've kind of been talking to people and stuff, and I didn't hear the kind of reports. Last year, we lost anywhere from 85 to 100% of the seedlings almost statewide.
Wow.
That people planted last year. I'm not hearing those numbers at all this year. There was some loss again this year, though, because of the drought. Again, as we talked about last year, is those things aren't really impacting this year. It's going to impact, you know, most Christmas trees take anywhere from 7 to 10 years to grow to get to that 6, 7, 8, 9 feet, whatever, depending on species. So we're probably another 6, 7 years away to see if we'll see any impact related to this. And as we talked last year, if we have another year next year, it just kind of keeps adding up. So hopefully next year we'll talk about something that's normal so we can kind of catch up. Christmas tree growers are great at what they do, though. They have ways to kind of adjust their inventories. They can sell less as they get closer to kind of spread that product out. So there's ways to adapt to this. But if you have it year after year, at some point it's going to catch up to us. So hopefully it won't. But so far, I've been out in the fields the last couple weeks, and trees are looking pretty good, but because of the drought, I've actually seen a few trees that would be saleable that don't look too healthy, that won't be sold in some farms and other places because the drought later this summer did have some impacts. And because of the kind of drought, too, we get more of the internal needle color on conifers sometimes, so people get a little alarmed about that, but it's normal. But as a Christmas tree, hopefully within the next 2 weeks, a lot of those needles will drop out. And when they go to the shaker and stuff, they drop out. So those aren't a concern.
And those trees that aren't looking good this year, is there a chance that if we have a couple good years, they'll recover and be saleable? Or are these things that where Christmas tree growers have to cut their losses?
Yeah, in some cases, they're going to have to cut their losses. And it just
quite
depends.
Quite literally.
Yeah, literally. They're and depending on the trees, and sometimes they'll cut those trees for wreaths and different things, parts. Maybe certain parts don't look so good and other parts are green. They can still utilize and recycle that material and get some use out of it. But it depends how bad they look. Some of them just look a little off. If they just look a little off, some of those trees will recover and they may be sold next year. But if they're really looking tough, it may be a tree that come this spring gets put in the chip pile for next summer.
All right. When of course we go out to buy our Christmas trees, it's pretty easy to take them for granted because there's, you know, you enter this forest that's been erected in a parking lot and all these trees look great. How much upkeep does a Christmas tree grower have on the trees that they'll be selling every year?
It takes a lot, and it starts from day one. You have to think about, from a production standpoint, if things work out, they can produce maybe 600 to 900 trees per acre, depending on how they space the rows and how they space the trees. Each of those seedlings can cost 50 cents up to a dollar, maybe even $2, depending on the size of stock that they use and stuff. So there's the initial cost there. There's the cost of the land. We know what the cost of an acre is these days. You look at farmland, we're talking $8,000, $10,000, $13,000 an acre. So there's a lot of investment. You know, a lot of these people that are doing that may already own that property. So there's a lot of investment just initially. And then once you stick that tree in the ground, you don't walk away and come back in 8 years and cut a Christmas tree. So even in the first couple years, when we have bad conditions like we've had the last couple years, you may have to actually water. Normally, in most plantations, they do not water. They actually use weed control. They may use herbicides. They may use hoeing. They may use mulch to basically keep a weed-free zone around that tree so it can really capture that moisture and grow. But even in the early years, they may have to take little stakes to get it to grow straight, or they may get some odd branches that they may trim off a little bit. But then once that tree...
We all want our Christmas trees to be shaped
just
so.
Well, you'd be surprised, though. I help at a local farm, and, you know, you get out there and you look at a tree and say it's the ugliest thing you've ever seen, and somebody thinks it's the loveliest tree. And so it's in the eye of the beholder. So sometimes we even hesitate. We look at a tree and think it's, well, I wouldn't cut it, but someone might. So sometimes you leave those. But that tree doesn't just continue to grow. So as you start to get, say, 12 to 14 inches of good shoot growth on a tree, then at that point you actually have to start shearing a Christmas tree. And that's where they come in either late summer, or if it's a fir tree, they can even come in the fall or the wintertime, and they actually take a knife or a blade, and they start giving that tree that shape. A lot of people like different shapes. You go to different farms, they shear them a little. Some shear them tight, some shear them loose. Some people like that open growth. You just get a lot of different characteristics. But that takes a lot of work. If you have 600 to 900 per acre, and in most acre, you're not going to, because trees do not grow at the same rate, you may not have all trees in that acre ready at the same time. But, you know, it may take hours and hours and days, and there's kind of a short window. Like with the pines, we often want to get those sheared by mid to late summer, June, early July. We need to get those so they can set new buds, so those buds can pop the next year, especially if they're not going to be cut. So once that tree is probably 4 to 5 years old, it's going to be sheared until it's. So that takes a lot of effort. Then you have insect and disease pressures. You also have to create a handle on that tree. People often don't want to come in. They have to have room for their packages underneath the tree. So those branches don't just disappear. So as that tree develops, they often come in and prune those lower branches so you have a foot or 2 foot
right.
clearance. All that takes work. And all that takes time. So there is a lot of effort and a lot of time. I've worked with a lot of growers, though, and they're really not in it to get rich. They love Christmas. They love maybe to grow trees. They like working with people. There's a lot more to it to them than just, hey, we're going to make a lot of money. And it's not a business. They're going to make tons. They can do a good job. They can do reeds. They can add a lot of other things to market. You know, a tree may cost anywhere from $27 up to $150, depending on size, species. But you can add a wreath in there. You can add other things. I mean, people can walk out of there and spend a little money.
I go out to spend a little money.
Okay.
Now, of course, if you're going to a Christmas tree farm, and we have a link up on our Facebook page where you can search for Christmas tree farms in your area, if that's the kind of experience you have. The Iowa Christmas Tree Growers have their own website, iowachristmastrees.com. And So when you go there, you know you're getting a tree that has been freshly cut. When you go to one of those parking lot forests, a lot of those trees have come from Michigan or other places around the country. How do you pick a good tree that's going to last for a while?
Well, first thing you do is you watch. 3 weeks ago, I saw Christmas trees showing up in parking lots. So you depending on where you're going to go, you kind of look, and hopefully you look at ones that come in this week or early next week, and you talk to those people. And the other thing when you get to that farm is, or when you get to that parking lot, is you look at that tree. I mean, if it's an off color, that may be the first thing. And then you can just do the touch test. You can just run your hand across the branch and just gently. And if you look at your hand and there's a lot of needles, that tree is dry. It's not a good tree. But then you can also use the bend test. You can just take that branch and just bend it a little bit. If it's got good flexibility, you may even scrape it and you still see some green color. Those are the kind of things. If you get in there and the tree kind of smells musty and stuff like that, I mean, these are the things to look for. And the other thing is just ask them, when did it get cut? But it is not unusual in most of these. Even farms that have chosen cut may bring in others to add to what they have. And it's not unusual to have stuff cut maybe 2 or 3 weeks ahead of time. And that's pretty common. The good thing is the last couple of weeks have been starting to get kind of chilly and stuff. And we haven't had 50, 70, 80 degree days. So trees haven't been sitting in a parking lot. And evergreens can stay green for months. And especially once they're in, they can take care of it. But you know, if you get to a place and the needles are falling in your hands and they're not, you know, they're snapping, you may want to go somewhere else. But talk to the people that are selling those trees, find out where they came from, find out how long they've been cut and those kind of things.
And they're going to last longer outside than they will once they get in your house. I mean, the inside conditions are pretty detrimental
correct.
To a tree,
especially
right?
If they're not taken care of correctly, if they're put by, you know, high heat sources and stuff like
right.
that. Yes.
Okay, so you want a fresh cut on the bottom, right?
Right. So even if you go to a choose and cut, and let's say you decide to stop at the restaurant and have a cheeseburger or whatever and do all that stuff, if you're going to wait more than 3 to 6 hours before you put that tree back in the house, it's actually not a bad idea to give it a fresh cut again okay. before you go in. If you buy it from a lot and they can fresh cut for it right there and you're going to put it up in the next few hours, you know, go ahead and
save
do it.
Yourself
if you
some
can't,
trouble,
yeah,
right?
If you can't make the cut. Or if it's going to be a number of hours and they can make a fresh cut, get it home, stick it in a bucket of water, and you're good to go. And then you can just, you know, move it in the house, keep it in the garage or somewhere cool, even if it's on the outside of the house. But keep it cool for a while. But you got to keep them in water.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm here with DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. We're talking Christmas trees, and we can do a little bit more of that when we get back. We'll also be taking your questions at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa.
O Tannenbaum, wie treu sind deine Blätter.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it is our last weekly Horticulture Day for 2013. We're going to go to every other week for the rest of this year and then through about March next spring when we're starting to look forward to the growing season. With me today is DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. We've been talking about Christmas trees today, and now ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is here as well. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. And of course, you can join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Now, before we move on entirely from Christmas trees, and well, we don't ever have to move on this hour if you keep having questions about them. But all right, when you bring the tree in, you've got the fresh cut. Is there a particular kind of Christmas tree stand that you feel works best, Mark?
It all comes to water capacity. The more water you can have available to that tree, the better. And obviously, you need a stand that's going to hold that tree. So you don't want a little cup trying to hold up this big tree. But it really comes to water capacity. The bigger stand that you can have, the more water can hold. Because, you know, a tree can take maybe a quart a day or more, depending on it, depending on the size and stuff. And in some cases, it may take a gallon of water a day. And so there's different sizes there. And there's all kinds of different systems of ways to – you can put liter pop bottles so you can keep feeding it like you see on different watering utensils mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But it's really the capacity, the more water that can hold to keep that. Because the bottom line is do not let that water line get below the uptake of that tree. Because in a lot of cases, if you wait a little bit, gaps get created. And if you water it again, that tree may not take that water up. And the only way to get it to take water up again is recut it. And if you got decorations and all that good stuff on it, you're not going to want to do that.
No, so you'd rather just have needles falling
right,
like crazy.
Right. So the key is to be able to make sure that that tree does not run out of water. And again, as we said, keep it away from, heavy sunlight, hot heat sources, stuff like that, that may dry and cause that tree to utilize a lot of water.
All right. And this time of year, people always share their surefire tips for, hey, you should put this in with the water. You believe water is the most.
My surefire tip is to use water.
And Richard, didn't you say you tried 7-Up or something like that one year?
Yes, I did.
And he didn't like it, I don't think.
How did that go?
Within a few days, I started to notice a smell, which got stronger and stronger. And then I got down on my hands and knees with a sponge and a turkey baster and took out the water.
All right, so water. All right, great tip. And let's go to the phones at 866-780-9100. Rob is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Rob.
Oh, hi. Hey, listen, great show. A couple little anecdotes. When I was in graduate school, my wife and I would come back from Colorado early, but we always wanted a tree. So as soon as they came out, we would go to a parking lot somewhere and buy the ugliest little Charlie Brown tree, is what we called them, we could find, and put it up for a couple weeks before we left to come home for Christmas. And we'd put that out on the curb right when we were leaving there a few days before Christmas. And within hours, they were all gone. It didn't matter how ugly the little tree was. Somebody would grab it and take it in. And the other one was back in the 50s with my father. We didn't have a lot of money, whatever. So his tactic where we'd all go along is we'd go to a parking lot place, the old A&W here in Cedar Rapids, if anybody remembers, and he'd buy kind of the cheapest big tree he could find and ask him if he could have some extra branches, and then he'd go home and drill holes in the tree and mount branches in it.
Wow.
And tie them up with string and put those great big 7-watt bulbs all over it so it always smelled good. But it was a way to, make use of all those old Charlie ugly brown trees. So that was just the story.
Thanks a lot, Rob. Yeah. Thanks a lot for sharing.
Great.
You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. I know everybody has their different preferences. It's in the eye of the beholder. But what seems to be the most popular species for Christmas trees right now, Mark?
Well, early on, for years and years, it used to be the pines, things like Scotch pine and white pine. But I would say in the last 10 years, I've really seen a trend, and I think maybe it's come from the East Coast, is the firs. People really like the firs. I don't know if it's the scent, the touch, the shape, whatever. But there's a couple different firs. Fraser fir and Keenan fir are probably the most commonly grown here in Iowa. And they've even gotten into Korean fir, and a few people still grow Douglas fir or balsam fir. But people really seem to like the firs.
Do you have a personal preference?
I've always been a pine guy myself, but because of home pressure, I've shifted to firs here the last couple years because that's what the bosses want. And
right.
I live with three of them. So.
How about you, Richard? Do you have a preference?
Fraser fir.
Right.
I just like the appearance, the shape, and you can hang things on the tree very well, very easily. So
yeah, the branches are nice and strong.
Yes.
One
yes.
challenge with the white pines is their branches are very kind of flimsy, and so if you do have those big, heavy ornaments, it's tougher for them. Scotch pine are pretty dense. They can handle those, but that is one downside to the white pine is their branches are pretty flimsy.
All right. You can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Richard, here's a question for you from Sam in West Des Moines. Hi, Sam. Sam, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, hi. What's your question?
I just planted some bulbs a couple of weeks ago, and tulips, daffodils, crocus, quite a few of them. And the bulbs seem nice and healthy and plump and everything, but as I was planting them, a lot of the brown paper coverings came off, and I'm wondering if that's going to make them rot or is that going to harm them?
No, that shouldn't be fatal. This should be okay. It's protective, but this should be okay. So as long as the bulb itself was solid and firm and a nice kind of light brown color, then they're okay.
All right, Sam, thanks a lot for your call. And you can join with your calls at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, of course, Christmas trees aren't the only thing that people associate plant-wise with Christmas. Richard, I know it's a little late to start preparing our Christmas cacti for for Christmas, but what have you been doing? I know you have some in your home, right?
Well, they're currently blooming right now. They have been for about, I would say, maybe a week or 10 days. So you don't really do much of anything. They're basically a short-day plant, and as the days get shorter in the fall, that triggers flowering. And so they typically bloom sometime around Thanksgiving, December. But right now they're currently blooming.
All right. And you do need to make sure they're not in a room that gets a lot of artificial light, right?
Right. That's the key. So basically in September, they should be in a room that doesn't receive artificial lighting at night. Because as the days get shorter, that initiates flower development. So I have some that are near a hallway. And one side of the plant will have flowers and the other side none because they got a little bit more light. So.
All right. And so if you're one of those people like my mother was when I was growing up, wondering why my Christmas cactus never blooms, you could still move it to another room now. You wouldn't get blooms for Christmas probably, but
you might get some possibly maybe around February, March, possibly.
All right. And, of course, poinsettias are going on sale are all around. And there are people who are growing poinsettias have been restricting light to those as well.
Right. They're short-day plants. And they started that back in basically September. So they should be coloring now. You can find them in retail stores right now. The key there is on a day like today, make sure they're wrapped up before you bring them outside and put them in the car. And then at home, basically, make sure they're kept well watered. And I would just use your finger, stick it in there every day. If the soil surface is moist, it's fine. If it's dry, go ahead and water well.
All right. We have a question from Trish in Davenport by email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. She says, we didn't have snow in Davenport and the ground is still workable. What can I do now to prepare my vegetable bed for next spring? Can I fertilize now? If so, what kind of fertilizer?
You wouldn't want to fertilize now. You want to do that in the spring, right before you plant. If you fertilize now and we have a hard rain, the ground's not frozen, that nitrogen will leach out of the soil. So you want to do that right before you go ahead and plant. So you could, I'm not sure if you can by tomorrow because the ground may be frozen by tomorrow, but if the ground is not frozen and your soil, let's say it's difficult to work, there's quite a bit of clay in the soil, what you can do is take some organic matter like compost or even shredded leaves, add those to the garden, and then till those in, and you're basically set for next spring.
All right. Back to the plants that we also associate with Christmas. A lot of stores have little Norfolk pines on sale, you know, little tiny Christmas trees. But those are not actual trees that we would plant outside.
Absolutely not. No, okay. They're not hardy.
But, and they're actually not a pine.
But they do well indoors. The key there is to make sure they're kept well watered and make sure they also have plenty of bright light. They don't need direct sun, but they have to be close to a window so they get bright light. And make sure they're kept well watered. If they're allowed to get too dry, are kept way too wet, or if they don't get enough light, typically the lower limbs start to kind of droop a little bit, and then they turn kind of a grayish green, and then they turn brown. They die. So when they're under stress or if their environment is not favorable, they will lose their bottom limb. So make sure they have a good sight, they receive good care, and otherwise you can keep those for many, many years.
Well, before I had kids, I was able to keep one for many years, and now I keep buying them and they die every year. So apparently my attention is divided now. Eveline is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Eveline.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I'd talk about Christmas tree customs. Can you tell me what the difference between a Christian and a Buddhist in regards to Christmas trees?
No, why don't you tell us?
Okay. Well, Christians on Christ's birthday, they cut down a tree, a living thing. And Buddhists, on Buddha's birthday, they plant a tree.
All right.
It's
well,
food for thought.
Okay. Thank you, Eveline. And there are people who have a hard time cutting down a tree to bring it into their house for the holidays. And there are many people who do other things to get around that. And a lot of people like to plant pine trees or
right.
fir trees. So if you want to plant one, Mark, tell us what we need to do to use that as a Christmas tree.
If you actually
want
to use a living
it.
Tree. Well, the first thing I'd say is on these Christmas tree farms, every tree that is cut, usually there's one or sometimes two planted to replace it. So it is a farm, like a crop, that they're actually growing those. And the good thing is those trees are growing for 7 to 10, 12 years and giving those great benefits when they're young, producing oxygen and all those other things. Then they're cut, but then they're replaced. So it is a renewable resource that we're utilizing. And in a lot of these areas where they're planted are areas maybe where the slopes are too high, shouldn't be farmed anyway. And so we're trying alternative crops in those locations. But living Christmas trees are a big challenge. The thing is you need to really plan ahead. And with the temperatures that we have, if you haven't already planned for this year, it may be too late because you really need to dig your hole before the ground freezes.
You can dig in Davenport.
Well, you can dig in Davenport or depending on where you're at. But you need to think a month or two ahead of time. So you want to dig your hole before the ground freezes. And you want to make sure that you know how deep you're going to dig it, because one of the problems and challenges we have with planting is we often plant them too deep. So you would actually want to see your tree that you're going to use maybe before you dig the hole so you can actually get that depth correct. And then you want to fill it with some type of material, straw or something, to keep that ground from freezing. And you want to take that soil that you're going to put back in the hole and you want to put it in a location where you can keep it warm, cover it up so it does not freeze either. And then when you put that tree in the house, you're only going to put it in there for about 5 to 7 days. So you're going to get that tree maybe a few weeks beforehand, a week or two beforehand. You're going to keep it in a cool environment outside so it's acclimated to the weather. Then you're going to put it in the house, but you're only going to put it in the house for 5 to 7 days. But you got to keep that root ball, if it's balled in burlap or a pot, you got to keep it moist. You don't want to overwater, but it's going to lose water in the house. Take the ornaments off. Right after Christmas, you take it back outside and put it in an area like the garage or somewhere and kind of get it acclimated again. Don't just stick it out in the ground right away and say, okay, you had 5 to 7
right.
days of nice
help,
heat.
Help it transition
now
a
grow.
Little bit, right?
So you need to put it in a transition location and then plant that tree. That's a lot of work. If people are willing to do that, I think that's, you know, an alternative. But you need to select the right species, too. So you need to look at your area, just like when we talk about tree planting in the spring every year. You need to, you know, most evergreens like moist but well-drained soil. So you need to find a location. So you need to do all this ahead of time so you pick the right tree, a tree that's going to be good inside, and a tree that's going to be the right tree in the landscape.
All right.
So it can be done, but it takes – there's actually a nice little thing online, ISU Extension Forestry. Actually, it's called Living Christmas Trees, and it kind of goes through all the steps on what you need to do to try to get that done.
All right. And maybe the ground hasn't frozen forever.
So I would say in most places you can probably – it hasn't been cold enough yet. I would say in most places in Iowa, you could probably still dig a hole if you wanted to. The challenge might be now is actually finding a tree – in a nursery. They're starting to shift because of the seasons. They're moving them to different places and stuff, and that may be one of the challenges now.
All right. Well, we'll get back to your questions in a moment. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's try to slip one in before the break. Tim is on the line in Ames. Hi, Tim.
Hello there. Say, I have some walnut trees, and some of them are pretty decent, and I'm just trying to figure out what the value is. They're like 24 inches in diameter. I've got 12 feet to the first branch, which was hacked off, and then you got another 12 feet that's decent. I'm just trying to figure out what are these things worth, if anything.
Well,
we're screwing around with selling them.
Okay, Tim. What I would actually advise is go to our website, iowadnr.gov. Are these in a yard or in a woodland?
Basically a large yard, which is also pretty much a woodland too as well.
Well, I would go to iowadnr.gov and find your local district forester and talk to them. And when we come back, I'll maybe talk about some of the values of walnuts and stuff, and you can listen in. But I would call your local district forester. They can actually look at those trees and give you some ideas if they have the kind of quality.
All right. Tim, thanks a lot for your call. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is here with us today, along with Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. We'll be back in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. We've been talking about Christmas trees, but Mark and Richard are here to answer your questions about any of the plants or trees in your life. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And now, right before the break, Tim had asked about the value of his walnut trees, and let's get a little more information
All
about
right.
that, Mark.
Well, that was a great question. And actually, right now, the walnut markets are very good, and they've been good about the last year and a half. And I'll talk a little bit about that value. But a lot of it's location, size, and quality. People think, I get a lot of calls. They hear from people that black walnut's worth a lot of money, and they're rich and stuff like that. And there are some trees out there that are worth a lot of money, but there are some black walnuts out there that maybe aren't worth that much either. And so the straighter they are and the bigger they are in diameter. He mentioned his were 24 inches in diameter, and we usually measure that size at 4.5 feet off the ground is the measurement that we usually do. So the bigger that trunk is, 20 inches plus, the better. If we have a 12 or 16 inch, usually you don't have the volume of wood, what we call a board foot, in that tree to really produce enough lumber or produce enough veneer. And then the straighter that tree is, if it has a crook or if it has defects, like an old branch wound or a cavity or places where the woodpeckers were pecking or things like that, all those have an impact on the quality. There are some trees out there in the world and in Iowa. We are known in Iowa to grow some of the best black walnut in the United States. We're known very well for that. But these little defects can start chipping away at that value fairly quickly. And having trees that are straight with no defects, those can be kind of needles in the haystack sometimes. So the value can go down a little bit. But I would say on average, if you have a high-quality tree, let's say that you had a 24-inch tree and it was 16 feet, it would roughly have 200 to 230 board feet. If that was a high-value tree, what we call veneer, with four good sides to it, it may bring $3 to $8 a board foot. Well, at $8 a board foot, 200 board feet, that's $1,600 for a tree. That can be – we've had walnut trees in Iowa sell for $8,000, $10,000. $24,000. Those really high numbers are needles mm-hmm. in a haystack again. We've had average sales, though, where a black walnut's in a large sale may sell for $400 to $800 a tree. Again, it comes to quality. One of the challenges and one of the reasons I asked where he lived is if there are trees near buildings, houses, those kind of things, we can often have metal. Staples, nails, wires, all that, if that goes through a sawmill, that's not good. So a lot of times log buyers aren't as interested in those trees around those areas. They can use metal detectors and those kind of things. So the bottom line is there's a lot of factors that go in.
So he needs to get somebody knowledgeable
right.
to take a
look at it. That tree could be worth
then...
$50. It could be worth, you know, a couple $100.
All right.
But so there.
All right.
All right.
Let's go back to the phones. Walt is on the line now in Mason City. Hi, Walt.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a small cedar tree that grew from a seed. I'm kind of partial to it because I had a big cedar tree, and then I had a perennial that died, and then this little cedar tree started coming up right in the center where I needed something. And the ground where I had it in was pretty normal, not clay or anything, and it grew to about a foot and a half in about 3 years and then just quit. I subsequently moved it. As we moved, I took it with me, and the ground I transplanted it in has got a lot of clay, but I dug out a big hole and put some regular potting dirt in there, and the thing still isn't growing. It's gotten to about 18 inches and just stopped, and I've got it protected from the varmints with some chicken wire. I've tried using Miracle-Gro on it. Is there something I can do here to make this guy grow?
Well, I'll jump in here, and again, it probably in most cases might be coming down to the soil in each of those areas. If there's a hard pan or something in those soil types that you're dealing with, the thing is, even if you add really good soil to a planting hole, at some point that tree reaches out and gets to the edge of that, and if that soil is not that good, if it's hard, it's not as pliable, those roots will tend to turn, and you're almost kind of creating a tree in a pot again. So it may just be the soil that you're dealing with, because cedars, they're not a fast-growing tree. They're kind of a medium-growing tree, but they're tolerable to a lot of conditions. They don't tend to like wet feet, though, so if it's a soil that maybe the drainage is a little off and they're not draining as well, that could be slowing the growth down a little bit.
Oh, it probably doesn't drain very well. There is it worth fertilizing it at all?
Well, to me, in most cases, fertilizer, if drainage is the situation, fertilizer is not going to solve your problem.
Gotcha.
Fertilizer is going to try to promote growth, but if those roots don't have the capability to grow because of the soil conditions, fertilizer is not going to help you.
Okay.
You may look in your yard if the tree, again, is not that big. If you have some locations where you think the soil is a little better, you may try to move her just one more time. But again, you know, cedar is one of those, as people say, well, I want a windbreak. I'll say, you know, get two posts, put a wire in between, and eventually you'll get some cedars growing because the birds will plant them for you. They kind of grow everywhere, like you mentioned and stuff. But they need moist but kind of well-drained soils.
All right, Walt, thanks a lot for your call. Good luck. Bo is on the line next from West Des Moines. Hi, Bo.
Hi, how are you? I have a question. I heard you mention a few minutes ago about living trees for Christmas trees. I heard the directions, but I didn't hear, for like central Iowa, are there some that do better than others?
Well, for conifers, that's where it's kind of challenging in Iowa, too. I mean, we're really looking at species like white pine, concolor fir, Norway spruce, maybe white spruce, and not all those are the best, maybe, selections for Christmas trees. Some people like concolor fir or white fir. That's a good one. So our list is kind of short. You know, I'll even throw eastern red cedar. I used to live in western Oklahoma, and our Christmas tree in western Oklahoma was eastern red cedar. A lot of people don't like that, but...
That's what grew.
That's what grew. So
those
again,
white firs that you mentioned, are those possible to get here in central Iowa?
Well, things like concolor fir, another name for that is white fir. That's usually available at nurseries. Norway spruce is available. White spruce is available. The other thing I would suggest in a lot of those cases, instead of buying a 6 or 7 foot like you would for a normal Christmas tree, I would probably go with a 4 or 5 footer, which is going to be more in balance with the root system, and it's going to be a lot easier to plant.
And cheaper.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for your help.
All right, Bo, thanks a lot for your call. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also post your question on our Facebook page or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This one is from Nick in Chicago. He says, I've been collecting seeds from the garden, primarily herbs, flowers, including wildflowers and greens. Do I need to do anything other than keeping them cool and dry? Are there some seeds that require a winter freeze?
Well, most of your annual plants, like your vegetables and annual flowers, typically do not need cold temperatures. And so the main thing there is make sure they're nice and clean, they're perfectly dry, put them in a cool place, dry place, they should be fine.
All right.
Now, as far as woody plants, many woody plants do need to be exposed to moisture and cold conditions for several, 2 or 3 months at least, to break dormancy.
And the best way to do that is actually if you want to grow oak trees or hickory nuts or walnuts is instead of trying to stick them in the refrigerator or someplace like that is to actually do it outside. So as those nuts hit the ground this fall or if they're still hitting them, is actually collect them now and actually plant them out in a garden or someplace where you
stick
might want
to. Stick a little flag.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you know where they're going
to
come
up. Or put a little
or...
chicken wire over the top so the Mr. Squirrel or Mrs. Squirrel don't come and dig them up.
All right. And that actually... Nick had a second question. He says, I wanted to grow some locust, oaks, maples, and catalpa trees from seeds I collected from the neighborhood. Should I plant the seeds now if I intend to transplant them in a year or so?
For most species, yes. And the other thing is, though, different seeds need different, sometimes additional treatments just besides the cold period. Sometimes I think Kentucky coffee tree and others, we might actually have to take sandpaper and really rough that seed coat to kind of break the seed coat down. There's actually a great publication online, and do you know the one I'm thinking about, Richard? It's the USDA publication on seeds. I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but
I can't either.
There's a great propagation book, USDA book, that has almost every tree species you can think of in the United States that you can get online. And it basically, by species, tells you what kind of treatments those seeds may need, what kind of cold period for germination and those kind of things.
All right. Here's another.
Woody Seed Manual.
Oh, okay.
I think it's called.
Woody
Seed Manual, USDA, sorry.
All right. Here's another question from Bev. We don't have a Christmas tree as such, but we do put lights on our braided fig tree, which we've had for over 20 years. It goes outside in the summer and puts on lots of new leaves. When we bring it in the house for the winter, it goes to a well-lighted spot, but it drops lots of leaves. I would like to know how often it should be watered while it's indoors and if there's something else we should be doing to reduce the number of leaves it drops.
The main thing there is the abrupt change in the environment. You're bringing a plant from outdoors where the environment is ideal. You're bringing it indoors where it's not nearly as favorable as far as the amount of light, the temperature, the humidity. So that change in the environment is stressful. And in response to that stress, they drop leaves. And the fig is very, very sensitive to that change, and so it tends to drop a lot of foliage. So the key there is try to choose a very good site indoors where it gets plenty of light near a window. Try to be consistent as far as watering, and possibly if you have a porch, you might kind of transition it from outdoors to that porch inside the house.
Okay, so go a little bit more slowly.
Right.
All right. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Frank is on the line from Fairfield. Hi, Frank.
Hi, good morning. I was just wondering, I have a 5 foot or 5.5 foot tall red oak that I want to transplant to another part of the yard from some timber that we own. When's a good time to do that?
Frank, I would actually wait and do it early next spring. Just as things start to warm up a little bit and the soil thaws out and stuff, I would try to get a decent-sized ball. The ideal would be even a small tree spade, even on a 5 foot. The more root system you can get, the better. But I would say you want a bulb probably at least 16 to 18 inches wide, if you know, on a 5-foot tree, maybe even up to 2 foot. So the bigger ball you can get, the better. But I would actually wait. The thing is, this time of year, we get a little bit of root growth, but that root growth was probably in the last couple weeks. And by moving it now, you're really not going to gain much. But if you do it early in the spring and get it transplanted, it will actually start to grow roots fairly early in the spring.
I see. Okay. And how deep does the how deep a root is there? So how far down do I have to go?
Well, on that, you're probably going to be around a foot or so. And I probably wouldn't go much deeper than that. You may have to cut a little root, but you'd be surprised. Again, we often think that these trees have these huge tap roots, and a lot of it depends excuse me, on the soil. If the soil isn't as adaptable or drainable, sometimes those roots, most roots are in the top, 6 to 24 inches. But if you go a foot, foot and a half or so, you should be all right. You know, you just start digging, and then you go from there. But I would say at least probably a foot.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Yep, great thanks job. A lot for your call, Frank. Next up, we've got Jim on the line in Prohl. Hey, Jim.
Hello, how are you today?
Good. What's your question?
Hey, I'm looking for a crop rotation, a sheet, you know, that can tell me what I can rotate from this year to next year to the next year on my garden.
Okay, as far as a vegetable garden?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the key there would be to know the different plant families. And the major ones are your tomato family, your tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, and potatoes. And then your cole crops, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower. And then your vine crops. Okay. Things like cucumbers, muskmelon, squash, watermelon. And so the key there would be to rotate the different plant families. And so where you had tomatoes, for example, this year, you could put in your vine crops, okay? Or you could put in maybe some of the root crops like carrots or beets. So try to move the different plant families around in the garden.
All right, and do you recommend those three groups, so it's kind of a three-year rotation, Richard?
If you can, right. You try to rotate as best you can. Ideally, you want to stay from an area for about 3 years if you can, because in many cases, the plant pathogens can survive for a couple of years. So if you can do it for 3 years, that would be ideal.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for your call. And a final question today from Rob. He says, I have a young bald cypress tree in a 5-gallon pot that I don't want to plant yet and need to overwinter it through our wonderful Iowa winter. What is the recommended method of protecting the plant in the pot, and does additional mulching, wrapping in burlap, et cetera, help with the overwintering process?
You can jump in, Richard, but I would, if he could, I would actually in the garden or someplace in the pot actually put it in the ground, in the pot, covered up with mulch or covered up with straw, and just leave it in the pot in the ground. If he can't do that, up next to a building, cover it up with heavy mulch around that pot to protect it. You have anything with that, Richard?
I prefer putting it in the ground,
yeah,
absolutely.
All
right. Mark Vitosh, thank you very much.
Thank you
and
very much.
And we won't see you until spring, right?
You'll see me eventually, yes. I'll be back. Richard says I'll be back.
So. Well, happy
he will
holidays.
Be.
Good.
All right.
Good. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh and Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
And happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
Thank you.
You too.
Likewise.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins, with help today from Jason Burns. And again, Horticulture Day will go into hibernation mode. So we will be here with Horticulture Day every other Friday through the winter months. We'll be back to a weekly program starting in March. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up Monday and Tuesday on Talk of Iowa, we're going to talk about the best books of the year. So if you're planning your holiday shopping, tune in on Monday and Tuesday for books for grown-ups and books for kids.